second or the third Sunday after the assembly, I preached in the church that I grew up in. And I preached beside the font where 8 generations of my family have been baptised. And that church is earmarked for closure. So it was a bittersweet day, that particular day. But we have to then say, well, things are difficult, things are different now, and we need to be looking forward to the future and what the future will bring. At the end of the day, we're going to make the future. The future won't happen to us. We have the opportunity to shape that future. So whether our buildings are closing, whether our buildings are staying open, everyone needs to know we're making a future together. And for those buildings that are staying open, my plea is, make sure that you're prepared to welcome and change and adapt, because others have made much bigger changes by going into a building that's new to them. You know, the people whose buildings open will also go through a period where things are different, things aren't the way they always were. So there's mourning in, you know, from them as well, and we do that journey together.
Hello, hello, Emerging Emmaus listeners. We are delighted to be back with a new series for our podcast series, Emerging Emmaus. Have you missed us? We've missed you. Neil, I've missed you. How are you doing?
I have missed you as well, Ruth, your brightness and beauty. I'm good. I'm plodding on, as we said there. Blessed are the plodders, for they shall be applauded. And journeying on with Jesus, lots to stretch and challenge and opportunities, yes. And we've got a great guest today.
We do. We have a super guest today. And I'm going to try really hard to get the title right, because I understand titles can be important, you know. But I think Blessed Child of God is probably a good title for our guest today. The church would give him a different title, maybe. The church would give the title of Right Reverend Shaw Patterson, because, friends, we have the moderator of the Church of Scotland, Shaw Patterson, with us. Shaw, delighted that you're here with us on Emerging Emmaus.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. And in terms of titles, almost everywhere I go, I hear something different. So do not worry. But the one that is important to me is Shaw. And a lot of people get that wrong, because it's an unusual first name, as I spoke about at the assembly. But Shaw is absolutely fine. However, for this year, walking through train stations, airports, down the street, my name is simply, to a lot of people, it's simply Moderator. And I've suddenly realised I've lost my personal name for the year. But I'll answer to everything as long as it's not rude.
It's great. Isn't it great that actually God knows us by name? Whichever name we might be given, God knows us, and he's got us by name. It's just wonderful. Well, again, thank you for coming on. We are really expectant and excited to hear some of the stories from you today as we look to have that journey that we know so many of our church are going through just now, from the loss and the lament, not just in personal life, but as we think about our congregational lives, as we think about that faith community, we are often experiencing loss and lament as we grow, as there's change. So we're having to let go of one place, move into another. Sometimes that's physical buildings, isn't it? But there's also, when you put down something or when you let go, there's this hope of new life that Jesus brings, and we see it in that Emmaus story. And so we know, as part of your moderatorial year, you have a great theme that you're working on and you're working from, called Building Together. And with that, you're around different parts of the country, aren't you? Visiting people and indeed abroad. So we'd love to hear from you some kind of dovetailing stories of your theme, Building Together, and what's happening. Who have you been meeting? Perhaps you might want to start. Where was one of the first places that you went to as moderator? One of your first visits?
I'm really glad you've asked that question, because the Sunday after the assembly, the moderator's supposed to take the Sunday off just to recover, because it's a hectic week. However, I didn't want to miss the opportunity to go to a wee tiny church in Argyll, in a village called Skipness, that's had family connections for a couple of generations now, and we've got family friends there who are very elderly. And I was asked, why are you going there? It only seats 20 or 30 people. And I remember saying this at the General Assembly, and I was really encouraged. And I told him I was going to this wee tiny church in you know, Kintyre in Argyll, because my view is that just as the St Giles Cathedral and Glasgow Cathedral deserve the moderator to go and visit, so do the wee places. And I want to get out and visit as many people as I can. And I know that church wouldn't take that, you know, doesn't take that many people, but they're important. And sometimes I think the wee places feel a little overlooked. And I know it meant so much to that congregation that a moderator, and as far as they could tell me, that's the first time a moderator has ever been in their building. The moderator has visited the parish as part of a presbytery visit, but never took a service in the building. And that to me was one of the highlights. It wasn't a big service, it wasn't a fancy service. It was just a lovely parish church service with myself being there, who happens to be moderator at the time, leading worship and being with people. And that's why I've accepted as many invitations as I can to go to churches all over the country and be with them. I'm not free every Sunday because I have, there's some set things that moderators have to do, but I want to, you know, I think people are people. Whether it's people in the pews, people in the parish, pensioners, pupils, Paterson then wants to go and visit all these different people out there and see folk, because their stories are the ones important, Ruth, not mine. I'm happy to share some of their stories with you, but it's their stories that are the ones that are important.
Yeah, they really are, aren't they? And I love that whole approach that everybody, no matter the sizes, it's the, you know, the people, it's the lives, they are so important. And love that you're pouring that recognition and honour into them. And I think as a church, we're getting so much better at honouring the different parts, aren't we? So I guess part of sharing their stories is honouring them. So, you know, even from that first visit, or maybe one in the area, is there a story that has really impacted you, or where you're aware that even your visit has impacted that area that you would like to share with us?
I think in terms of a generalisation, the good Lord has blessed me when I became moderator, not because of the titles and all these things. It means that I'm not involved in parish planning. And those who have been involved in doing parish planning work will have a wee smile when they hear that I am neutral to it all. So I was in a church within my own presbytery not that long ago. It's actually shutting. It was an anniversary. And it was shutting in a few weeks' time. Would be their last service. And I was there to celebrate an anniversary. And I had to be open and honest and say they're going through a painful time. There are huge challenges ahead. But also thank those over the years who'd given of their life in service and in ministry to that area and that community. And even those who'd put so much into that particular building. But then trying to encourage them to look forward. And it's amazing, in the midst of the tears that people have when they talk to me about their building closing, there are real tears there. You know, a lot of them are still quite positive of what the future might be as they start to envisage what that future is. And there is a lot of positivity, even in the midst of the grief and the mourning. There's a lot of positivity out there because some folk are, you know, I'm recognising that people are tired trying to keep a building going with maybe fewer and fewer people coming along, willing to take on tasks or do duties. And a lot of people are tired and they're now being released because of amalgamations, and there are more people there to support them. And folks are finding new ways to serve, which is giving them enthusiasm rather than just trying to fix the next leak in the church roof. You know, and it's wonderful to see, and I'm looking forward to 10 years from now, when we can all look back and see that's been painful and that's been difficult, and I will not minimise that in any shape or form. It's painful and it's difficult. However, we need to then think of the journey that Jesus will be walking with us as we approach Emmaus. And then at one point, we're going to look back and say, yeah, Jesus has journeyed with us on this. It wasn't easy. It was difficult. It was traumatic. But there is much to look forward to. We need to make sure we don't get so caught up in the negativity that we lose sight of the positive things that are happening. And I'm beginning to see the shoots of that so early on in the parish planning implementation stage. I'm beginning to see some positive shoots. I mentioned to you earlier, and I'll just say for those who are listening on, the second or the third Sunday after the Assembly, I preached in the church that I grew up in. And I preached beside the font where 8 generations of my family have been baptised. And that church is earmarked for closure. So it was a bittersweet day, that particular day. But we have to then say, well, things are difficult, things are different now, and we need to be looking forward to the future and what the future will bring. At the end of the day, we're going to make the future. The future won't happen to us. We have the opportunity to shape that future. So whether our buildings are closing, whether our buildings are staying open, everyone needs to know we're making a future together. And for those buildings are staying open, my plea is make sure that you're prepared to welcome and change and adapt, because others have made much bigger changes by going into a building that's new to them. So, you know, the people whose buildings open will also go through a period where things are different, things aren't the way they always were. So there's mourning and, you know, from them as well. And we do that journey together.
Yeah, there's a lot in there that you're talking about that I'm sure is really going to resonate with lots of folks. I mean, Neil, you are in amongst all of that as well, aren't you?
Yes, certainly. And I'm interested to know, you know, the 8-generation church building. So the church building is earmarked for closure, but the congregation, they're uniting with someone else, are they?
They have to unite with a neighbouring village in that situation. And that'll be interesting to follow that journey that's here. And my own presbytery are a bit behind the mark and everyone else, because the way the presbyteries came together, and we are just beginning to look at implementation. Stage the presbytery plan got through just before the General Assembly. Actually, in fact, I was already away on moderatorial preparation at that point. So there's a long way of trying to work things out. That's why I said it's earmarked for closure at the minute. There's no dates or detail as yet, and there's still, there's a lot of mourning and grief going on. Not that people shared it with me in the morning, because I think they knew I too have been through there. You know, and for generations that they knew that I was, you know, feeling with them for what they were facing.
Well, in Irvine here, we're in a process of working out, with the help of Presbytery, which buildings we do retain and lease. So we've got 7 sanctuaries, and we're going to have to reduce to probably 4, if not less. Certainly 4, probably. And it's huge. It's so hard to journey together. We've been trying to grow a sense of lament that's raw and real, but also hopefulness, as you are describing there, Shaw, and you know, getting beyond our own agendas to try and encourage an outward looking spirit. But it's very, very, very hard. And so we are celebrating history and legacy, as you've described there. It's so important that we celebrate, you know, a situation that has had worship for, you know, 250 plus years. It's remarkable and is to be celebrated. But there's also this sense of reality, raw reality. We can't go on just keeping buildings going for the sake of keeping buildings going, or as you say, there's this sense of new purpose that can come from a synergy that comes from congregations coming together. And so we are starting to feel that and experience that, but also have a real empathy with particularly those congregations that are in the face of possibly likely even, you know, having to release buildings. It's really, really hard. And as I remember in Ireland cycling, I've said this before, that I tried to get to a difficult destination, and the guy looked at me and said, who had asked direction, said, "Sure, if I was trying to get to there, I wouldn't be starting from here." And that's the truth. We would prefer not to be starting from here to get to where we want to get to, but we are here, and that's the reality. That's what we've got to face up to. And I suppose wake up and smell the nitroglycerine, not just the coffee. It is dramatic, the situation we face. And we mustn't shy away from that, but we need this hope that you're talking about, Shaw. We need this encouragement that you're talking about. We need the risen Jesus alongside us, whose way is service and sacrifice, don't we? We need the Jesus who shows us that it is sometimes letting go, even of life, to find a new life.
Yeah, I used an illustration the same. I think it was at the St. Giles service, and I've used it in one or two congregations since. I love Argyll. I love Kintyre. It's my go-to place to switch off. You know, I just feel a peace and a calm there. I think it's wonderful. And I love getting into a wee tiny rowing boat, not far off the shore, and just rowing, just getting a bit of exercise, a bit of freedom away from the mobile phone, the computer and the laptop, and there's no interruptions. But you're very conscious that when you're rowing there, you don't see where you're going. When you're rowing, you only see where you've come from. You're looking back from whence you came. And that's, you know, quite a metaphor for the church, because we're looking back at what has I been, you know, and what we'll miss and so on. And there's an element of trust. And every now and again, I look over my shoulder to make sure I'm not heading for the rocks or, any other kind of hazard. And there is that element of trust. And sometimes I've seen me looking around and going, you're a wee bit of an idiot, sure. You looked around 2 minutes ago and there's nothing there. You know, and you wouldn't have gone off course so quickly. And I think there is that sense that we need to be consciously looking over our shoulder, but not looking over our shoulder to look backwards, looking over our shoulder because we are facing backwards all the time. Because when we're about to lose things that are precious to us, that's where our focus is. And we need to be trying to glimpse what the future might be and where God is taking us and leading us. And, you know, for me, I think that illustration works particularly well, you know, at times when I'm in the midst of stuff or preparation and, you know, going to congregations where I know there are real difficulties and folk want to speak to me about them. And I say, it's that getting that glimpse of, you know, where we are heading. But it's difficult to turn our heads around, you know, because my own situation, I'm a product, well, recently, just before COVID, lockdown of a four-way union. And we're 18 months into it and lockdown happened and felt as if we'd almost to start again. Afterwards, one of the historic buildings is shut. Presbytery Plan has, at the moment, potential of my two villages to go. One has definitely to go in the next couple of years, and then the other one's being reviewed in a couple of years' time. So my own folks are facing up to the future. And some of them are sitting in the building going, but we did this 6 years ago. And we haven't had a chance to prove ourselves because COVID came in and that's knocked things out. But so many people have their own individual stories. But we only usually see the story from our own perspective. That's the thing. It's okay what's happened to you, but do you know what's happening to me? And I think it'd be nice if we were able to share with other people what's happening around the country, not just that everywhere's closing, because everywhere isn't closing. But we need to say, you know, you're in a unique situation. Let's learn from where other places that have gone, the coming together's not gone well, and the coming together has gone well, because we need to learn from the situations that maybe with hindsight, it would have been done differently.
Yeah, I love that thought about getting the glimpses, you know, of where God's taken us. And those, and I just wonder, Shaw, with your various travels here and abroad, you know, what are the glimpses that you can share with us of courage and creativity that are bringing that new life in, that are, you know, we're talking about releasing, you were talking about folks actually being invigorated when they're coming together with other places and new shoots of life. So can you share with us a glimpse, a couple of those glimpses that you've seen?
A couple of those glimpses, it's actually quite difficult to share them because there's a huge story behind those glimpses. You know, I mean, we could, you know, have a different podcast for each story. And I also think it'd be nice to actually hear the story from the people rather than secondhand from myself. But it's going to places where, you know, rural places, and they're proud to show you the food bank that they're operating. And I have a soft spot for food banks. I think we should be encouraging them more and more, as well as working to get to society where they're no longer required. But rural places, and that they take me in to show me what they're doing as a food bank. And there's perhaps, in my mind, when I'm used to seeing the kind of local one in East Kilbride, where it's always warehouse proportions, you know, small warehouse proportions. And it's in the vestibule of the church. And people have been reminding me that even some of the rural places have poverty and have people in need. We tend to think it's a city or big town issue. But even in the rural places, and some places that you would say that would be an idyllic community to live in or to retire to or whatever, they've still got the problems. It's maybe in smaller proportions to elsewhere. And folk have found new ways of doing food banks. There was one I came across recently where the food bank is open 24/7. People can just go in and they write in a bit of paper what they've taken. They don't write who they are, but it helps the people organising it to say, well, everyone's away with the kidney beans this week or whatever, so that they know what they're looking for. And they're open 24/7. And I know they're going to, this particular place is going to be changing it a little bit, you know, for just for other reasons. But the point was that people could come at a time where nobody would recognise them going in. Now, they live in a place where church security is not the same issue as it might be elsewhere, but they were taking away any sense of embarrassment or stigma that people might have bringing in to a food bank. That's a wonderful thing. That's a thing I'd love to be able to share with the bigger food banks. How can we try and create? Now, there is and shouldn't be any stigma going into a food bank, but people perceive it, particularly if they're going in for the first time. How can we look at, you know, that might be my next thing is, yes, support the food banks, but how as food banks can we try and create a situation where that sense of embarrassment, you know, can be, you know, lost? And that was one community's answer, was have it open 24/7. But that's not the answer across the board. And good news stories probably are good news stories in each separate community. But we can learn and adapt and change. And there's no point inventing the wheel again. It's been invented. Let's use it and adapt it and change it. But yeah, I think some of the folks who have been property convener for years, I think more and more it's the property conveners, because they can't get anyone to take the job on from them. And then when a union happens, they feel just relieved of that burden and responsibility, and the need for all the form filling and health and safety issues that they tend to take on board themselves. And it, in some instances, it's bringing folk down, and they have been freed of that. But then they start to, you know, it's amazing that the person in their 80s who's then, I've got a wee idea of what we can do with the youth. And when you listen to the idea, you know, this could work. So these are the things where being freed of the property burden, they're addressing areas in the church where service is required, that we might not put that, we would just put that person in, put them in a property box, whatever. In a union, put them in the property committee, and they're going, no, I don't want to do property anymore. I want to do something with youth. You know, I want to provide the cups of teas for the mums at toddler groups, so that the mums have the chance of a blether, not just, you know, watching their wee one all the time. There's areas like that that I think it's just wonderful to see folk have got this heart to serve and to give and to do what they can in the name of Jesus. And it's wonderful. And it's wonderful to see those. Those are the kind of good news stories that I would like to share.
It does sound a real kind of releasing story when you're talking about intergenerational church and serving, and how people are really responding to really close community needs, aren't they? It's been really, church being really involved in their community in a way that you can walk alongside the community, even when we're in a place of hurt. You're being able to go, do you know, we're going to keep walking. We've got Jesus walking with us. So we're going to keep walking, and we're going to keep walking with our neighbour next to us. It's, and I think there's something really encouraging as well in that concept of that intergenerational church approach. You know, where you do have the person in their 80s actually caring caring and serving and ministering with the young mums, young dads, young parents, and building the relationships there and getting to know the young families as well. It's just so biblical, isn't it? It's great to see all these generations spread out for and with one another.
But I'm also conscious that many of the examples I'm giving, you know, where people are tired, and you know, we've also got congregations that are facing adjustment one from another, where there are plenty of people resources, and there's lots of projects ongoing, and they can't quite understand, you know, why those changes are happening to them, and perhaps, you know, I haven't in my roles thus far, I haven't, you know, visited many of the churches in that situation. It's tended to be more the others where the buildings are going and folks are tired. But we have to reach out to the folks who are still going, why? And I think we need to, you know, help them, you know, to understand them, and maybe never fully understand. You know, it's the presbyteries who are making these recommendations and taking these things forward. But there are still, you know, some folks out there who are still struggling with the why question. And maybe my encouragement then is to try and see my presbytery visits without, and I can't be seen to interfere in any of the decision making, and I wouldn't, but say maybe you need to identify that the places where a wee bit more time is needed to explain the logic or the reasoning or whatever. And I know with some people, if it's their building closing, they'll never quite get to the point where they understand. But I think some folk are, well, in terms of my mailbag that comes in, a lot of folk are writing to me going, why? So we have to be aware that it's not all places that are really struggling that are closing. It might be geographical reasons or whatever. But it's the folk in the local ground, the presbyteries, that know the answers to some of those questions.
It's great that it's in response to need that food banks have been created. They shouldn't be needed, of course, in a society, but they are. And it's great when we're able to reach out with care and consistent love. And it is in connecting with our communities, I'm sure, that gets us out of ourselves, it gets us out of our issues, our problems, our situations, to see a bigger picture. And what I'm aware of, certainly among younger people and older people too, is an anxiety, that we are in an age of anxiety and an age of fear. And people are you know, post-COVID in the schools, there is more of an anxiety. There's less of a confidence, though it's growing. We had a week of interest involved in our local academies here, where we connected with the young people and staff. We called it Hope Week, and the people were really responsive and open to the church's involvement. And I wonder if you're aware of what I'm certainly aware of, you know, is a movement to plant churches. You know, there have been some conferences recently about that, and there was a period there where I was aware of congregations in the Church of Scotland and elsewhere that were seeing people come to faith and be baptized and confirm their baptism. And there were quite a few photographs that were up on Facebook of it, which was really encouraging. But what I think I'm aware of is it's where we reach out and we connect with people in their need, in their situations. There is a huge amount of anxiety and fear around. So how do we connect with people? You know, how do we get alongside people beyond our church walls? Are you seeing evidence of that, Shaw?
I have been amazed at the ways that people have connected. You know, I'm going around at the various churches, that the ways that people have found to connect, that don't make the papers, that don't make the radio or the television, and they're wonderful good news stories. And as you'll know from your presbytery, I'm just back from the first of the visits to the presbytery of the Southwest, and I was over on Millport, and it was wonderful to see the relatively new built church there, in its garden, having a polytunnel. It was a rigid polytunnel and a garden where the children come in and they're growing the vegetables. And the folk in the church are looking after the vegetables, watering them, you know, day by day. But the children are coming in and, you know, getting a whole thing about, you know, where our food comes from and whatever. And then when the vegetables are harvested, they're then making into soups and chilies and a whole range of things. The folk who are involved in that project would not see themselves as doing anything new or innovative or newsworthy, but they're doing tremendous work in connecting with the school kids, the parents, the teachers. And it's amazing what comes out of that. I noticed on Facebook the other day there was one of the churches celebrating doing toasties, and a variety of toasties. I have done that in my own church for years, and actually about a year or so ago we celebrated the 2000th toastie. By estimation, by the average number that we give out every and twice a week, folk come in. We don't do church when folk come into church hall. I mean, the church hall is only 20, 30 yards from the one of the gates to the school. But we provide a safe place in the terms of out of the weather. You know, it's warm, it's dry. I said yesterday, I'll come back to something in the sanctuary first. Worship. Somebody that's warm, it's dry, they can come in. We can watch to see who doesn't eat anything. Because we give free biscuits and free hot chocolate. A toastie is only 75 pence, but some folk don't eat anything. Even in a relatively comfortable place like Straven, where my home church is. And then we always make extra. And the extra are going in the bin. So we say to folks, rather than put these in the bin, does anybody want one? And that's connecting with people and connecting with youngsters in a way that we wouldn't otherwise. And who knows what plans God has when we make these connections? Who knows what happens down the line? I can be out visiting friends, coming back in midnight or whatever, and you see the youths that are in the street. And they're going, how you doing, Mr. Patterson? You know, as you walk down the street, they interact with you. And if I've had visitors staying with us and we've been out late, coming in, they're amazed that these young folk talk with you, you know, and acknowledge, and that's about building relationships up for the future. But it's actually the first website yesterday. I talked about my trip to Africa and how the dust gets everywhere, and I now see why there was a need to wash your disciples' feet before the Last Supper. Foot washing is important because it's really uncomfortable having dust between your toes and whatever else. I see it differently. And Ruth asked me the question, what's our equivalent? And my answer to that was bearing in mind this, at these lunchtimes, we take the blazers off the kids when they come in, when they're soaked through, because they won't wear jackets or anoraks, that's not cool. And we put them on the radiators in the church and we dry them off for them. So when they go back to school after lunchtime, they're putting on a dry and warm blazer to go back to school. These are the kind of things that it's trying to identify. There's no point trying to wash folks' feet in our part of the world, but what ways simple things would make a difference in people's lives and let them ask, why are you doing it? You mean, because we care about you, we love you. You know, I think that's, you know, it's trying to make those kind of connections. And it's difficult to say to, you know, as moderators say, I want every church to do X in this community, because it wouldn't work. Different things work in different communities. It's finding out about your community and finding what might work. And don't be afraid if it doesn't. Don't be afraid of going back to your kit session and going, that didn't work. That was a bit of a disaster. However, I've got another idea. You know, and you will find something that works.
There's just something so lovely in all of what you're saying about authentic relationships. You know, and if we're thinking about how do we respond to a world where anxiety is through the roof and mental health is through the floor in that sense, you know, and you think actually, surely one of the most important things that the world is looking to Jesus for and hence comes through us is authentic relationships where we are genuinely interested and involved in caring and reaching out and supporting people the same way that Jesus was. And I often think that actually, you know, it reminds me of the verse, you know, about pure love, God's love casts out all fear. And if we are carrying Jesus' love into wet blazers, hungry tummies, or wherever, you know, you're right. The context is so important for each church. It's not a one size fits all approach. It's got to be the one size that fits all is authentic relationships. And everything thereafter is different.
And the thing about authentic relationships is the people you're dealing with will suss out very quickly whether you're authentic or not.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you're not authentic, you're
absolutely.
Your time.
If we don't have their welfare, that service for Jesus and their welfare at heart, and we're wanting to make the church look better, we're going to fail. You know, you're right. It's not going to that they'll sniff it out. But when we're interested in walking on alongside them, you think, there's an ease and a comfort. It's like I think it's in Matthew. Jesus says, come walk with me and work with me. Learn, see how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I love that phrase, these unforced rhythms of grace that we learn from Jesus and then we get to, you know, give to others and walk alongside them with unforced rhythms of grace. It's so important to remember about these authentic relationships and how they are world changing one at a time. They, you know, even in Scotland, how that impacts the wider world too. Neil, what about, we're coming to the end of our discussion just now, right? And I'm just thinking, yeah, any other comments, questions, or even some takeaways from today?
Yes, what I love in you, Shaw, is your servant-heartedness. And that's heartening, it's encouraging, it's inspiring. You're not high above everybody else, you're alongside. And that's the Jesus, isn't it? Jesus is alongside us and we join him alongside others. The Holy Spirit's a great paraclete coming alongside. And so thank you for your servant heart. Thank you, God, for Shaw's servant heart. And that will be having an impact across our church, I'm sure, as you journey and you visit and get alongside people. So I'm really encouraged by that, and encouraged to, you know, to hear of the stories that you're sharing and of people connecting with the needs of others, getting beyond our own wishes and wants, and that's so important. I think a part of this whole process. Yes, we lament. Yes, we very easily get wrapped up in our own pain. And we do have need to process that pain. It's raw, it's real, let's be honest with God about it, but let's get beyond it, let's get through it. And let's see, and one of the things that helps us do that is the needs of others. When our eyes are lifted beyond our church building, beyond our walls, beyond our situations, to see the needs of others. And that's the Jesus, that's where Jesus leads us, isn't it? That's where Jesus takes us. So I see that in your approach, Shaw. So thank you for it. Thank you for your encouragement. Ruth, what about yourself?
Oh, I love that we are, and from what you're saying, Shaw, we're just taking the magnifying glass and we're pausing and we're stopping at where we are and we're magnifying kind of like the small things that might go unmissed and how actually Christ is magnified in them. And I think, you know, as we are in that road, wherever we are on that road, that Emmaus road, you know, stopping to put the magnifying glass on what God is doing and to just see how God is magnified in it and to praise him for it, you know, that is, it makes you, you know, it gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling on the inside. You suddenly go, oh, that's wonderful. And it really encourages you. So thank you for putting the magnifying glass on these bits that we need to pause and stop at and reminding us to do it, because that's certainly what one of the things I'm going to be taking away, just how these, you know, that circular image that you get in a magnifying glass, how then that can be shared out as well. So thank you so much, Shaw. And we pray blessings on you with this rest of the moderatorial year as you are building together and encouraging us to build together, showing us ways of how we can build together here and beyond our shores. And of course, for your community and your ministry that is in your parish area, we do pray that they know Jesus walking with them whilst you are walking with others.
Thank you.
So thanks so much, Shaw. Neil, brilliant to be back, isn't it? Just thank you again.
Good. Thanks, Shaw. And thanks, Ruth. Yes.
Thank you to all you super wonderful Emerging Emmaus listeners. Thank you for being with us for our podcast with moderator Shaw Patterson. And we look forward to you being with us on next time too.
In your neighbourhood, trudge two dumped Jesus friends, drowning before dawning, moving through a maze of misery to an amazing Emmaus encounter. Emerging Emmaus.
Good grief, our dream is dead. Going home instead, comfort of my bed.
Good grief, the pain. Hope hard to sustain, love down the drain.
Good grief, where have you been? What we've seen? Blown to smithereens.
Good grief, how our hearts burned, our mind turned, or all we learned.
Good grief, don't go away. Come in to stay. You've shown the way.
Good grief, how he broke the bread with hands that bled, then disappeared.
Good grief, Jesus alive? No need to strive, chance to thrive. Jesus alive.
Good grief, no time to waste. Now we have a taste, to Jerusalem with haste.
Emerging Emmaus, a well-kent lament echoes through the years. How long? How long? Good as is the grieving process, may it be a means to access visions and dreams of Christ's kingdom come. Emmaus, emerge from the gloom. Come, Holy Spirit, come.
So for future podcasts, join us via the Sanctuary First website, Facebook page and app, and also via Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Come on, tune in.